CPA and CFP Don Cash has made it his life's work to help people like you plan their finances and achieve their retirement goals. It's time for Your Money and Your Life.
Welcome into this edition of Your Money and Your Life with Don Cash and myself, here to continue our conversation about getting our house in order. We're saying goodbye to the tax season, but hello to tax planning for 2024. So as always, we appreciate you tuning into the podcast, whether you're listening to us on Apple or Spotify or YouTube or whatever platform you like using. As always, make sure you click that subscribe button so you catch future episodes, as well as you can check out past episodes. And you can find all that information, again, at their prospective sites, or just go to Donald's website at donaldcash.com. That's donaldcash.com, and get yourself subscribed to the show that way. And of course, you know, if you need some help, reach out to him and let him know that you'd like to talk about getting your house in order. Tax season is behind us. The warm weather is moving in, and the allergies are playing all sorts of stuff with my face today. So, Don, how are you, my friend?
It's good, Mark. It seems like it's either hot or getting cold, or today it's getting warmer. It's going to be cold today. It's weird.
Constantly.
And my, as my mother-in-law used to say, the weather can't make up its mind.
Nope, it's off its medication again.
Yeah. Well, now that my schedule is actually loosening up a little bit, you know, after the tax season being behind us, I decided to take my own advice and get my own house in order, Mark. And,
nice.
Every spring, I'm sure you do this too. Every spring, we do spring cleaning and landscaping and things like that. Last week, I was taking a walk around the property with our landscaper, kind of pointing out things that need to be done. And as usual, I was kind of in a bit of a hurry, and I didn't notice. I was standing behind a patio paver that was kind of jolted out of place by a tree root. And as I moved forward, my feet caught the base of the paver, and I fell forward straight down to the ground, landing on both hands like I was doing a push-up.
I hope you didn't get hurt.
Well, you know, it's one of those things, like, you know, you watch like these old cartoons, and it seems like, you know, things kind of go in slow motion.
Right.
This happened like, boom, I was down on the ground.
Rapid fire, huh?
In an instant. Fortunately, I fell into the mulch and just had a sore wrist. But the simple lesson is just to take your time and pay attention to your surroundings, right? It could have been worse.
Yeah.
But the good news is the landscaping, it does look great.
Well, so there you go. You just wanted to get a close-up view of the landscaping. That's what it was.
Yeah, it really did.
Well, you know, that story is a good tie-in to getting our house in order from a home maintenance point of view. So let's pick up our financial perspective on putting that 2023 tax season behind us and looking forward to the planning of 24 and even 25.
Yeah, Mark, it's hard to believe that we're almost 4 months into 2024, right? Wow. I mean, it's just, you know, time just flies by. We talk about it all the time. There's some big changes that are in store for this year and the end of next year from a tax change standpoint. But some of the things that we talk about today, I think, are going to fall into the category of what I call, I bet you didn't know, right? That category. But here's one that many people do know. The tax changes from 2017, the code that we have now, it was called the Tax Cuts and Job Act. They're scheduled to expire at the end of next year, at the end of 2025. So investors really need to know the impact that that's going to have on their planning. And we also need to keep an eye on the rules and regulations that really have not changed over the years and have affected people over the past few years, particularly since inflation has heated up. And I'll call these sort of stealth taxes.
It's not like that, stealth taxes. Well, I don't like it, but you know what I'm saying, right? So these the categories, things that fall into the I'll bet you know, didn't know category. Let's start with that last point first, the stealth tax. Hit me with that.
Yeah, so the stealth tax is a type of a tax or regulation that's really not noticed by people very much, Mark. I'll give you an example of two. One of them is the exemption for capital gains when you sell your primary residence, your home. So in 1997, a law was passed to give homeowners an exemption of $250,000 on the capital gain from the sale of what's called their primary residence, right? The home you live in. So if you're married, it's double, it's $500,000. course, there's certain rules that apply to get that. The main one is that you have to have lived in the home for at least two of the past 5 years. So it relates to the only to the primary residence. It does not relate to rental or vacation property, and people need to keep that in mind. But the rule before 1997, Mark, was that if you're over age 55, you only had a one-time $125,000 exemption from capital gains from the sale of a residence. So, of course, you can always add home improvements and things like that to the original purchase price, to what is called the tax basis of the property.
I got you. Okay. I mean, I can certainly see why they changed that number. That does feel fairly low.
Yeah, that was a low number. And it was one of the largest rules that was ever changed in the tax code in terms of benefits to taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
What many people don't realize is that if they sell their house, their primary residence for a loss, there's no tax deduction for that. So that was a big surprise, a big problem for people during the 2008 financial crisis.
Interesting. Well, so elaborate on the rule a little bit on that, Don. I'd like to learn some more here.
Yeah, so the rule is this. You might pay a tax on the gain on the sale of the property,
mm-hmm.
but simply you can't deduct any losses you have on the property. So young people, I think, in particular, need to keep this in mind today as they're buying homes, you know, right now at the top of the market with mm-hmm. these interest rates the way they are at 7%.
Right.
Here's the problem going forward for, you know, for many people like us who bought their homes years ago. In New Jersey, the average home value way back when in 1997 was $160,000.
Okay, average. Okay.
Average, right? Median, they call it median, which is kind of the midpoint. And as of 2023, that median price was $660,000.
Wow. $500,000 increase. I mean, interesting, right?
Yeah. So if you do the math, right, that's the exemption. So if you're married,
yeah,
right, you have no gain.
No
right?
gain. Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the question. What if you're single?
Okay.
Right. What then you have to face that gain because it's $250,000. And really the reality, Mark, at least around here, the home values in many parts of the state are much higher than $660,000.
Right. That was the average, right? Correct. Okay.
Yeah. And they seem to be going up continually, even from last year. So that rule, you know, really, you know, needs to be updated. That capital gain rule from 1997, it really should be updated for 2024.
Is it a one-time benefit, Don, or can you move and take the exemption again?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's really, you know, something that's a continual point of confusion, Mark. And I think it's because people just don't move much, right? So here's the answer. The old rule, the pre-1997 rule, was a one-time only exemption. And you had to be over age 55 to get that exemption. The current rule is that it needs to be your primary residence that you've lived in at least two of the past 5 years. But you can take the exemption multiple times. But here's a potential planning mistake and a question that comes up frequently that I say, Mark. Here's the question that comes up when I get calls from clients. And it goes like this. Should I put my home or maybe my parents' home in my name, or should I put my home in my kids' name?
Right, right.
Right. Move the ownership down another generation. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the question is really one of retitling the home. And it often comes up with the fear of nursing home expenses, right? Eating away at the home value, particularly if like one spouse becomes ill. So if someone does that and gifts the home, let's say to their child, or, you know, you have your parents gift their home to you, for instance, and the child subsequently sells the home, there's no $250,000 capital gains exemption.
Right.
Right. You inherit what they call their basis on the property. And since, you know, again, that they were the original owner, there's no exemption on that capital gains. However, if mom, let's say, bought the home for $100,000, let's say, and for simple kind of simplicity's sake, that's the tax basis, and you're the daughter who received the home and the transfer and sell it for $900,000, you're going to have a large taxable gain. You won't get the either $250,000 or the $500,000 exemption. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind that that loss step up in basis also applies to vacation property. And that's kind of a common thing I see as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. A good thing to point out, because often we do see those questions. Well, I'll just put this in somebody else's name and instead of waiting till I pass, and sort of not a good idea often. And it's interesting about the vacation property. Can you give us a common example?
Yeah, I see a lot of people, or at least in my neck of the woods, Mark, who have parents who, they may have bought a beach house right. in the 1970s, let's say 1975 for $50,000, right?
Right.
And now the land alone could be worth over $1 million or several million dollars. If they gift the property to their daughter and the daughter sells the property, bingo, capital gains, right?
Gotcha.
When the daughter sells. However, let's say if mom keeps that 1975 home in her name and leaves the property to the family at death,
right? Yep.
Then there's a step up in basis, and the daughter may have zero capital gains when she sells the property. So it's always really important with these matters, Mark, to speak with a seasoned attorney before you do anything like that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, right? So, you know, to just kind of re-clarify that for folks and myself. So if you bought it for $100,000, you hang on to it. And then when you pass away, you give it to your kid and they sell it. It's worth $500,000 at that time. Well, then that's, they don't have to pay capital gains on that $400,000 increase, correct? They just pay, if they were to sell it, they pay just what it does from the time they took ownership.
That's correct.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, obviously, to your point, yeah, that's why you need to work with qualified professionals in a lot of these things, not just an attorney, but certainly you want to work with a holistic planner like Don. And as always, again, if you got some questions, need some help, reach out to him. Find him online at donaldcash.com. That's donaldcash.com. Great information on the capital gains rule for homeowners. What are some other stealth taxes that we might face?
You like that word stealth, right?
I like it, but not in this context.
All right. Here's a second one that it's really little known or discussed much anymore, Mark. It's the tax on the Social Security benefits, right? So here's the rule. Before 1983, going back a long time, all of your Social Security income was completely tax-free. A lot of people don't know that. Then in 1984, they created a rule to state that there would be a 50% tax on half the Social Security benefits for incomes greater than $25,000 for single people and $32,000 for married couples. And they also raised the retirement age at that time from 65 to, between 65 and 67, depending upon when you were born. So if we take a closer look at those numbers, right, $25,000 for single people and $32,000 for married people, those numbers haven't changed in 40 years.
Jeez.
I mean, that's just amazing when you think about it, right? So if you were retired and living, let's just say going back to 1984, you were living on interest income of $24,000, right? Mm-hmm. And Social Security of $12,000 a year. So a total of $36,000 in your income. You would pay zero in Social Security tax and very little likely in total taxes at those rates. And by the way, up until 1976, there was zero income taxes at all in New Jersey.
So jeez, yeah.
We didn't have any. I guess we funded the budget through just property taxes and things like that. So if we look at these numbers today in inflation-adjusted numbers, that $36,000 of income back in 1984 is $110,000 today with inflation. So if you have an income today of $110,000, let's say, including, let's say, Social Security of $36,000, you're likely paying at least $8,000 or $9,000 a year in taxes. Mm. And depending upon your age, it'd be a few thousand more in state taxes, at least here in New Jersey.
Yeah, I think that qualifies as a stealth tax and certainly something that needs to be adjusted from 84.
Yeah, that's no doubt. But here's the point, Mark. They actually did adjust it after 1984.
Oh, that's right, because it's a higher bracket now, right?
Yeah, now it wasn't adjusted in a good way.
No, not a good way, right, yeah.
So 30 years ago in 1993, Congress decided to increase the number of benefits taxed from 50% to 85% of the Social Security being taxed for incomes over $34,000 for single people and $44,000 for married people. And those numbers have not changed in 30 years. So, jeez, you know, currently it's really difficult to have a decent income in retirement without paying a substantial tax on all of your Social Security benefits.
Yeah, and I think that what also frustrates people is that Social Security is a tax on your income when you collect the benefits. So you're paying a tax on a tax, right? I mean, yeah, it's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but you know, it's kind of like, and I don't want to be philosophical on it, but because it is frustrating, I get that. It's like anything else in life. We need to kind of just understand the rules, plan around it, and maximize the benefits as best we can, right? That's why we have analytics and software that we can look at. We can look at your earnings history on your Social Security benefits, see how much you've earned over the years, how much you've paid in taxes, look at the projected benefits at various ages, and put together a plan to maximize the income. And people need to know also that there's different rules for married couples compared to single people and what the tax rates are for married versus single people. It also comes as a real shock for widows, those married versus single tax rates. But getting back to the Social Security benefits and the analytics, when we do the analysis for people on this, Mark, who haven't decided yet,
right,
we can often get, you know, maybe a hundred or even more, 100,000 or more in extra benefits over the lifespan of a typical retiree. So
sounds like like planning, right? So
absolutely. Yeah. So you have to look at it closely and understand the tax brackets as well.
Well, regarding the election of when to take Social Security, and again, it can make a big difference here in the numbers, you know, are most people still turning it on at 62, even though it may not make the most mathematical sense?
It still is the case, Mark. Most people do. The majority of people do take it at 62. Interestingly, when the Social Security started back in 1935, you had to wait until 65 to get the benefits.
Right.
Then in the 1950s, they allowed for early benefits at age 62. But Mark, it was only a benefit for women.
Interesting.
Not for men. Hmm. Men had to wait till 65. But that changed in the 1960s, and they gave that age 62 benefit to men as well. But the most popular ages are 62 and age 66, right? It makes sense. Mm-hmm. 66 being the full retirement age
at the time, especially at that time, yeah. For most
yeah,
people.
You know, even you know, if you're born, depending upon the year, if you're born after 1954.
Right.
So about 25% of people start at 62, 25% start at age 66, or now 66 in a few months, since that's the full retirement age.
Right.
But there's income restrictions if benefits start before your full retirement age. So that's something that people keep an eye on. So if you're, you know, making more than like $21,000 a year or so, you have to give back the benefit. So it becomes really punitive if you're doing any kind of substantial work. Mm-hmm. But only about 10% of people wait until the maximum age of 70 to start collecting benefits. But the benefit, you know, if you do wait that long, the benefit with deferred credits and inflation can really be quite substantial. I get that some people really need that money at age 62,
sure,
so it makes
sense.
Or they could have health problems, or you know, there's a factor involved that causes them to pull the trigger that early. However, there's great planning opportunities for those who wait. And like I said, you can collect, you know, an additional tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars over your life expectancy.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's important to not just have a collection of these items and then have, oh yeah, and Social Security. All should be working together and inside your, you know, overall structure and plan for retirement. And it's obviously very complex, and that's why you need a professional like Don, right? So what else?
Yeah, you know, when it comes to all these changes to Social Security and, you know, real estate rules, we need to keep in mind that really the reason they keep on changing these things in the government is that they need the money to pay all these benefits.
Yeah.
Right? There's like $7 trillion a year going out the door in one form or fashion in expenditures. And That's the reason. So Social Security was tax-free for about 50 years, but eventually economics and demographics caught up to the system. And we have to look at the fact that, you know, right now we have some very favorable tax rates and rules, but they're not going to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
At least until the end of next year, the federal income tax rates are at historic lows right now. However, by law, on January 1st, 2026, the tax code reverts back to the old tax code from 2017. So that's something people have to really keep in mind. In addition, currently, there's the step-up rules that we mentioned for death, for capital gains on certain assets like real estate and investments. But yeah, really, you have to think about this. Who knows how long that's going to last, Mark?
Mm-hmm.
They're always trying to fiddle around with that one because they hate the idea of losing that tax revenue when assets pass to the next generation. So also, we have to keep in mind that capital gains today are taxed at a lower rate than ordinary income, right? They're either at 15%, the capital gains rate, or at the highest 20%. Also, that people don't realize that if you're in those first two tax brackets, there's a zero tax for capital gain. So got to ask ourselves, how long is this going to last?
Indeed. And there are a lot of potential changes and a lot of potential opportunities out there.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, potential changes, opportunities, there's always moving parts and there's always something that comes up. And sometimes these things just come up out of the blue, right? And they have a tendency to keep on making these changes like the week of Christmas, right? At the end of the year when there's
nobody's paying attention. That's why.
No, people. And then you can't do anything for that year. So you have to make sure that you're on the ball. And it kind of messes up the lives of many of us people in the financial services industry. But another thing we have to keep a sharp eye on, not really been talked about too much lately, is the federal and estate taxes. And currently, in reality, very few people even pay a federal estate tax, Mark.
Mm-hmm.
The exemption for 2024 is $13.6 million per person. So, you know, many states like ours and yours, like New Jersey, have eliminated their estate taxes altogether. But we have to keep in mind that not that long ago, it was only a $675,000 per person exemption, both federally and in New Jersey. So if your assets were anything over that, which is a lot of people, you are paying both a state and federal estate tax. So the reason I bring this up is that there's a $34 trillion federal debt. Many states as well are deep in the red with their budgets and pension obligations. It only takes a stroke of the pen with legislation like what we had in 1983 and 1993 with Social Security to change the rules and create even bigger tax problems than what we have right now. So the point really is to gets back to the subject of getting your house in order, like we talked about last week, Mark, with legal documents and an updated will and perhaps a trust.
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of complicated information in there and certainly some good things to think about. And you were definitely right on one thing today.
And what's that?
That there was a lot of I bet you didn't know items.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, it's a lot of stuff that even I have to constantly keep on top of and read about and collaborate with colleagues. So, you know what we always say, you know, an educated retiree is a confident retiree, and that's what we're here for.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll put up some links and tackle more of the issues on the next show as we usually do. So again, don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube platforms. Just type in Your Money and Your Life in the search box of those apps, or just go to Don's website and get some time on his calendar and talk with him as well, which you can find all that other information at donaldcash.com. That's donaldcash.com. He's a CPA and a CFP at Donald W. Cash and Associates. So make sure you check him out and if you've got those questions, and don't forget to hit us up, and we'll see you on the next episode of Your Money and Your Life. Thanks, Don.
Thanks, Mark.
Investment advisory services offered through Donald W. Cash and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor in the state of New Jersey.